you. My name's Zaini and I'm an addict. I'm very nervous and also in a slightly silly mood, so I'm going to do my best not to be silly. Not too much anyway. For those of you who know me, you know that it's kind of uncontrollable in me, but hence the name probably. But anyway, alright. I haven't really thought about what I'm going to talk about. Mainly because I hate those rehearsed speech chairs. I hate those ones that are all a bit like somebody's reading it off an auto cue. And also because I notice when I've been asked to do a chair, if I start thinking about what I'm going to say, I actually get bored as well when I'm doing it. And I just want to be spontaneous and I just want to be with you here now and just to do my best to be who I can be to the best of my ability. I have to say that I did a chair here about 3 years ago and I stupidly listened to that chair yesterday. Because you know what I really noticed? That I grew up in Hackney and then since I've been clean I've kind of, you know, moved out of Hackney and so I feel like sometimes my accent's a bit posh and sometimes it's a bit street and sometimes it's a bit like a bit ethnic because I'm originally from Cyprus. And I was listening to my accent, I just thought, who the fuck am I? I don't even know. It's not a good idea to listen to your own chair the night before you're gonna do the chair, but anyway, it's too late now, it's done. So what am I gonna share about? Well, I guess I could just do what's recommended, which is tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like for me was, in a word, horrible. Started off really good fun. Also, I thought, given that was my concept of fun at the time, and bless you. Do you know what, when I think about what my using was like, I go into a kind of trance, to be honest, because I could barely remember what it was like, to tell you in detail what it was like. I can tell you what I felt like. I can tell you that I felt, on a daily basis, like I wanted to die, but I didn't have the energy or the self-worth to kill myself. That's what it was like. And I hated everybody, I hated myself, I hated the way I looked, the way I sounded, the way I felt. Everybody was fat, stupid, ugly, ignorant. They stank. Do you know what's embarrassing? I just suddenly had a realisation that actually sometimes I feel like that now on a bad day. But anyway, let's move on swiftly. Right. So, basically, I was just very, very deeply discontented on every level, just really unhappy in myself. And if you had asked me what I felt like at the time, I would have told you I was fine, because I thought it was perfectly normal to feel like that. I thought everybody felt like that. If I think about it, I didn't have the ability to think about what I was feeling or even feel what I was feeling. I didn't. It was only when I came here and I started to listen to people that I even really understood what feelings were. Like, when people would say, how do you feel? I'd say hot, cold, or tired. We're like, feelings? What the hell are they? It would be like, you might as well ask me in a foreign language something or another. Just no. There were no feelings in my house. There was anger, ridicule, and violence is not a feeling, is it? No. Unless, of course, you're the recipient of violence, then you have a feeling of some sort. But that's the sort of household I grew up in, and I have a very, very boring using story, so I'm going to skip over it, but just tell you that I did enough using for me, more than enough for me, to get me to a place where I felt physically, emotionally, and spiritually completely broken when I came here. And I didn't really know that I had a drug problem when I came here. it was almost by accident, really, that I came here. But I was hooked from my first meeting. I didn't get clean straight away. It took me a few months of coming to meetings. And I think I was very lucky that I listened to some people and I didn't listen to others, because at that time, and I think it's changed a lot now actually, at that time there was this big thing around heroin, and it was almost like you can't be a member of NA unless you've done heroin. And I didn't even know what heroin looked like, and I still don't, you know, apart from what I've seen on telly. You know, I've never done those kind of drugs, and seriously have no desire to do them, because if I used that stuff the way I used the other stuff, I would not be here. So thank God I didn't listen to those people who asked me what I was using, and when I told them, they went, "Is that all you're using? You haven't got a problem, you're not an addict." Something slightly controversial has come out of my mouth, so I'm going to let it. Those people have relapsed now, you know, and I'm still here, and I've been here just over 17 years, continuously. And I say that partly because I like the affirmation, and partly because I'm really proud. It's taken a lot of hard work. It's a day at a time, and I haven't done it on my own, but it has taken hard work. Like, it didn't happen like that. But it was a day at a time, and I think it's really important for me to acknowledge that, that it didn't, you know, didn't happen overnight. It took time. And, I've totally lost it now. Never mind, was I? So, yeah, partly I tell you because I like the affirmation, but also because I think it's important for people to know that it can be done, that people can stay clean for long periods of time, and it does get better. It really does get better. If there's anybody new here, and if you feel anything like I did when I was new, which is I felt totally paranoid, self-obsessed, and like every single fibre of my being was magnified and like I was transparent and like you could see through me. So if you feel like that, I promise you it gets better, I promise. Having said that, suddenly I feel like that now. So I came to meetings, I kept coming back, and at this stage of my story, I often say, I wish I was one of those people who got a sponsor straight away and worked the steps. I didn't. I resisted tooth and nail. I was absolutely terrified of working steps, because I was terrified, basically. I was terrified of everything, everyone, and I have to tell you, I didn't know then that I was scared. I know now, as a result of having worked a program and having an understanding and having learned a language to explain what I think and feel. I didn't have that when I first got clean. I just felt constantly dissatisfied and discontented, and like there was something quite seriously wrong with me, both internally and externally. But I didn't know that. I just had always felt like that, so I thought it was normal. So like I say, I resisted for quite a long time because I was really frightened. I was frightened of being a part of anything. I was frightened to join you. I was frightened to make connections. I was frightened. As I say that, I just suddenly thought, oh my God, look, I can make eye contact now. I couldn't do that. I couldn't even tell you what I was really thinking and feeling. So frightened. I was 27 years old, and I dressed like a child, and I felt like a child, and I had no concept of what I wanted, what I needed, no boundaries whatsoever. I'd be in meetings sharing all kinds of inappropriate stuff, unaware of the fact that people in these meetings have very good hearts. We all do. We do. We're good people. But the reality of it is, lots of us are very unwell. And so... I said that really good, didn't
you? You did.
Can I get an extra year clean time for that? The reason I say it like that is because I could say it to you like this. I could say it to you, I was a vulnerable 27-year-old woman and I shared about all kinds of stuff and I got hit on. I could say it to you like that, but you know the absolute truth. Do you seriously think I haven't done the same? I have, and I think it's really important for me to own all these, you know, the stuff I want to project onto you. You know, I want to go, you lot of sleazies, you lot of perverts, you lot of... You think I haven't got that stuff in me? How the fuck do you think I recognise it in you? I've got that stuff in me, you know, and it's time to own that stuff. And for me, that's what recovery is about. It's about owning all the aspects of myself, everything. Every little, you know, shitty little bit that I'd really rather pretend that, you know... that I don't actually take a shit in the morning. I actually shit rose petals. That's actually true. That bit. Anyway, let's talk about steps, because that's my most favourite bit about being in recovery. Because that's when my recovery started. I was clean for quite a while, and I started to go perfectly mad, and I didn't know that I was going mad because I thought it was normal, because I was mad before and I was just very gradually going madder. And you know when the volume's turned up on something really slowly, gradually, you sort of don't notice it really, do you? But, so I was getting madder and madder and madder and madder. And then probably when I was about 5 years clean, I had a bit of a breakdown. Not like a being sectioned breakdown, but a kind of a bit of a what the fuck is going on in my life type breakdown. And I suppose I got desperate enough in eventually. I have to tell you this, I always have gone to step meetings. I love step meetings. And I used to have a commitment, you know, the Tuesday night Hampstead step meeting. I used to have a commitment there. Never worked steps, had a commitment there, was the GSR, all that kind of stuff. I have to say this, though, I know it's changed a lot in NA now, but you know, at the time, people never really, in my experience, people weren't working the steps so much. I'm a bit scared to say that someone's going to come up and slap me afterwards and go, I was working the steps. Well, I wasn't, and the people I worked with didn't. Seriously, everybody I knew, it was like if someone shared about the steps, everyone would fidget, and be like, fucking step, no, it's I didn't, because I was good. But no, I did. Everybody did. We hated people who worked the steps. We thought they were all bastard idiots. Swats. Anyway, so eventually I became a bastard idiot swat as well. And anyway, so I'm in the step meeting, moaning like I always did every week, sharing the same shit, thinking I was really fascinating and interesting and really like dynamically neurotic. All this stuff about my childhood, my inner child, my inner self, my needs, my wants, my... What, you know? And then I was just sitting there, and suddenly I just had this... I just looked at the steps, I just thought, oh my God, this is a 12-step fellowship. 5 years. I was a little bit of a slow learner, wasn't I? Anyway, so eventually I did get it. And I think I actually shared that night and said, oh my God, the solution is actually in the steps. That's why we have the steps, isn't it? And I remember there were people there with really long clean time and they were just looking at me like, poor fucker. I often think that those people are much nicer than I am now, actually. I'm quite intolerant around people, I think, sometimes. Anyway, so yeah, I got myself a sponsor. I didn't get a sponsor and straight away do it. The first time I went through the steps was, you know, they'd talk about being searching and fearless and all that stuff. What I've noticed, the longer I'm clean, my concept or my ability to be searching and fearless has changed. Since that first time of going through the steps, I've actually been through the steps another 2 times. So in total, I've been through them 3 times. And the most recent time, I went through them about 2 years ago. I was about 15 years. And again, it was because I had a bit of a breakdown of sorts, like an emotional kind of shedding that went on for me. And I did what I always do, you know, when I'm going through a difficult time. I'm very lucky that my thinking isn't very wise, but my feet are incredibly wise. And when I'm going through a difficult time, the first thing I do is get to a meeting. I have no shame about that, no pride. Just, it works for me. And there was a time when I used to really question, why does it work? How does it work? It's a cult, it's this. And now I think, who cares? It just works. You know, when I'm feeling low, there's nothing like chocolate cake. Do you seriously think I question why chocolate cake works? No, I eat it because it tastes good and it works. And I just do this, the same thing for me. This works, and I just do it. And so my understanding of the steps has changed each time I've gone through them. And this time around, I realise that step one for me is, more than anything, it's about a willingness to surrender to what is. It's about a willingness to accept my reality as it is, not how I wish it was, or how it could be, or how I think it should be, or your reality, or fantasy, or any of that stuff. It is my reality as it is in this moment, to accept it. And my reality, as it is, in this moment, is that I am an addict and I am powerless over my addiction. Initially, when I did step one, that meant my focus was purely on drugs. This time around, going through the steps, I am looking more at, I'm looking at drugs, I'm looking at people, I'm looking at places, things and situations. Because, I mean, I don't know about you lot, but my disease isn't fussy about how it manifests itself. It will attach itself to anything. Anything that changes the chemicals in my brain and alters my mood, I can become addicted to it. And I often say this, I could probably qualify for every single fellowship I've ever heard of, except for Gamblers Anonymous, but that's because I'm really tight. And quite poor, actually. But probably I could become addicted to that. Unmanageability. Sometimes, you know when I'm sharing and I say a word out loud, suddenly I think, oh my God, I don't even know what that word means. What does unmanageability mean? Well, for me, it means when I don't take responsibility for what's going on in my life, I can become unmanageable. I can do too many things, and I'm much less unmanageable clean, but I can still get unmanageable sometimes. I can still get unmanageable. And for me, it's so much, again, about surrender. Surrender to what is. I can't do 55,000 things in one day. I can't. So having put down the drugs and realised that I'm powerless over my addiction and that my life is unmanageable, I was left with a kind of a void, a feeling of, well, what do I do now? Like my best friend, I've had to let go of my best friend, the thing that fixed me for, I don't know, how long I used for. So it was almost like I needed to find something else to fix me. And then you lot lovingly tell me that there is nothing to fix you, that you can't fix on things. You have to think about a higher power, a power greater than myself. That was really scary for me. I was brought up in a very strict Muslim family, and the concept of God that I was given was a man with a white beard who was sitting up there judging what I was doing with my genitals. And I didn't really want to hand my... I should suddenly say, actually, I don't really have very good airs and graces, I'm sorry. My excuse is I'm foreign. It is a good excuse, though, isn't it? Anyway, my concept of a higher power is you lot, really. And it's you lot because I came in, I was in complete chaos, and I really didn't know how to live. And what I did was, I watched you, and I listened to you. And I listened to you lot, openly, honestly sharing in meetings about how you did your lives. People were going through all kinds of shit, you know, having, like the previous speaker was saying, about having loss and bereavement. People were talking about losing their jobs, about breaking up from relationships, but they weren't getting stoned. They were just talking about their feelings, reaching out for support, praying, handing it over, and going through these things. I never went through anything. If I could avoid a feeling, if I could avoid any kind of pain, I would do it. No way was I going to have any feeling. Nothing that made me feel uncomfortable, I wasn't doing it. I just wasn't going to do it. And that, so that, for me, that's my higher power, you lot. Then when I got to step three, that really got complicated, and I had to really think about my concept of God. And one of the suggestions my sponsor made at the time was to really look at how step three is worded, that it says to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. It doesn't say to the murder of God, or to be thrashed by God, or to be judged by God. It's said to be to the care of God. And it's a loving God. And so I really had to think about, what do I want my God to be? And I think it's probably one of the hardest things to share about, my concept of God, because it's such a personal thing. But I have no problem with it. And again, it's very much for me about being with what is. I really do believe that it's so much about just surrendering to what is, accepting what is, what's going on. And the more I tap into that source, the more contented I feel in my spirit, when I just can check in with what is really going on and just be with that. Do you know what? I feel like I could share about step four for hours. This time around, step four had such a profound effect on me. Some of the resentments that came up for me, I was quite shocked by them. Some of the resentments, like some really old childhood resentments. I resented my mum for not being able to speak English, and how embarrassed I was about that. I resented my mum because, I mean, they came over and I was born 6 weeks. Just gonna wreck the place. I was born 6 weeks after they got here. And so they couldn't speak English. There was 11 children. I was the 10th of 11 children. We were refugees. We were poor. I mean, I'm talking seriously poor. I never had a coat. It to wear your clothes to bed. It was freezing, freezing, freezing. And I haven't shared this. I didn't even know that socks were supposed to fit the way they fit, because I was the 10th of 11 children, so I had to wear, we all just had this whole bag of socks that we all wore. So I thought socks, they were meant to fit where you fold the bit underneath, because they were always too big for me. Do you feel sorry for me now? Buy me socks. That's how poor I was. Anyway, so I resented that stuff. Now, it's easy to get into rational thinking and go, they couldn't help that stuff. They couldn't help that stuff. That's the reality, okay? But those resentments that fuel my addiction, they're not rational, and that's why it's important to get them down in step four. It's all very well me sitting here in my adult 44-year-old self saying I really understood that my parents did the best they could. But you know, when I was five and I had to go to school and do PE in my underwear and my knickers were too big because they were my 16-year-old sisters and I was five, that was hard. And I had to run like this holding my knickers up. Do you know how embarrassing that was? I mean, there was a time when I used to think that's what I used on. What a shit. I used because I'm an addict, for fuck's sake. Not because my knickers were too big. I just feel like someone, I just shared that out loud. It's being recorded. Somebody kill me now. So that's the stuff that came up in my step four. Why is it important for me to bring that stuff up? Why was it important for me to write the stuff down? Well, I'll tell you why. because that stuff really fueled a lot of my anger, hatred, bitterness, my justified feeling less than, feeling superior. It fueled all that stuff, completely unconsciously. It was fueling it. So while it might seem like a ridiculous throwaway resentment that we're laughing at now, because it is funny, but you know when you're five, it's not funny. It's really not. It's traumatising. And so like, you're stuck in that five-year-old way of thinking somewhere deep in my head, and that's fueling me at the age of 44. And I'll tell you the one in particular, which is quite an uncomfortable one, but it really shifted some stuff for me. I mean, you know, it was the 60s, Stoney Newton, very few ethnic minorities at the time. Now it's full of them. Now it's like spot the white. But at the time, it was not. And so I encountered a lot of racism from white people when I was at school. Now, as an adult, I can understand why that happened. Not when I was five. I didn't understand why people were looking at me funny, why when I put my hand up, I was never picked. It was always the blonde kids. I didn't understand that. And so I had a resentment. And when that came up for me in step four, it was so powerful to look at. I had a resentment towards white people. Now, I can understand that on some level it's relatively politically incorrect to say that in a room where it's predominantly full of white people because you might kill me afterwards. But that, you know, it's important to own that stuff and just look at what. Because I was racist. And I had to look at that stuff to own it, to look at what was fueling it. What was fueling it was the racism I had encountered as a child. And you know, the minute that came up, I swear it was gone like that. The resentment was gone. And my thinking shifted immediately. Now, I am not going to sit here and say to you, I never have racist thoughts. I do. And anyone who says they never have racist, sexist, ageist thoughts, I just think, really? Okay. It's what you do with them. I don't act on them anymore because there's nothing fueling them anymore because the resentment is cleared. And that's what I got from step four. It cleared all the stuff that was feeding my resentful behaviour, the stuff that was keeping me stuck. And the patterns, the repetitive patterns that came up for me, you know, the relationship stuff. God almighty, it was so embarrassing. You know, I do this whole thing. I always go out with unavailable people. I'm always attracted to unavailable men. Because I was fucking unavailable, that's why. You know, and I'm always attracted to men who are game players. You know, they do that thing, they do that, come here, go away, come here. I wonder why, because I was doing that same game. But if you'd have said that to me, I would have said no. I'm not like that. What a load of shit. I would be like, I was ready to commit. It was him. Really? Why was I attracted to someone who couldn't commit then? Why was I doing that? Because it was the perfect excuse not to do it. All that stuff surfaced for me in step four. And what was really helpful was looking at what was fueling that behaviour. What was fueling it was fear. My favourite defect, fear. Now, some people say that fear isn't a defect, that it's perfectly normal and natural to have fear. Of course it is. It's perfectly normal and natural to be angry. It's fine. Anger is a really, really motivating emotion. If you step on my foot and I don't have anger, then I'm not going to set a boundary and say, can you please not sit on my foot? But you know, too much anger, if you accidentally step on my foot and I punch you, that is defective behaviour. Like, and I hear people say, what are these, you know, defects of character? It's really judgmental, it's negative affirmation. It's like, defects of character for me is just behaviours that don't work anymore. They're defences that I picked up along the way. I defended myself with racist thoughts against the pain of having experienced racism. I defended myself against the fear of getting close to a man because of my experience of having got close to a man and being hurt by playing games. just defences. That's all they are. I don't need them anymore. In a way, it's like having fought a war and then now being in peace, but still wearing the armour. You can't play and dance in armour. I want to play and dance. I mean, I don't know why you guys got clean, but I want to have the time. I don't want to be in a war all the time. I just feel like I've done my time feeling unhappy. I want to feel good. And, let's talk about really uncomfortable defects, shall we? Let's talk about lust. I'm allowed because I'm foreign. Lust is the one that everyone just squirms and pretends they haven't got. Really? Have you not? Because I've got quite a lot. Anyway. I'm going to pray for the removal of your lust. And I was thinking, I'm never going to get laid again. Pray for the removal of your lust. How are you ever going to have good sex? What are you going to do? How many people in this room now want to get under their chair while I'm talking about this? I do a little bit. But let's face it, we're all adults here. I think we're all doing it. Hopefully we are, anyway. Having prayed for the removal... I was reluctant to pray for the removal of my lust because I really thought sex was about lust. I thought good sex was about lust. How wrong was I? It's not. No. I'm not really sure how to put this into words. Good sex is so not about lust. It's so not, is it? It isn't. It's so much about desire and about passion and desire for that specific person, whereas lust is like this uncontained... I'm going to swear a little bit, I'm sorry. It's like just fucking anybody. And how is that special? And that doesn't make me feel good. It's not fulfilling. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like just snacking. You know, snacking on crap food. You know, just so as not to be hungry. But really, you know when you have really good sex with someone that you love and it's coming from a place of love, desire, passion, and desire for that person, it's like having a really good dinner. Seriously, you know, with really good ingredients, all organic and perfectly prepared and lovingly presented on a plate, and then you can really enjoy the meal and feel really nicely full afterwards. That's the difference. Yeah. I'm telling you, seriously. Give it a go, it's worth it. Yeah, it's worth it. And then you get to wash up together and you have fun. Anyway. What other uncomfortable defects should we talk about? I think that's the most uncomfortable one, isn't it? I always feel like, let's not share about that. It's rude. Yeah, so anyway, I just wanted to say that out loud because, you know, for me, when I first got clean, I was really scared. I thought, pray for the removal of the lust. Who would want to do that? It might be insane. Yes. It is much better without it, I have to say. So, can't think of what to say now. I'm having a slight shame attack, but that's okay. Anyway, the other thing about the removal of defects, I was worried about what was going to be there in place of the defects. And that's where I started to learn about the spiritual principles. That it's about letting go of the defects and cultivating spiritual principles. So to let go of my fear, judgment, intolerance, impatience, lust, anger, self-pity, which is one of my absolute most favourite, all-time best defects of character. I love her. She's my best friend. So letting go of her and then cultivating things like humility, love, acceptance, faith, tolerance, patience, understanding, desire, passion, playfulness, joyfulness, all those things that make me feel good in my soul, make me feel good in my heart, make me want to be around you, that stuff. Step 8, the list Isn't it really good having sponsors? Aren't they great? Because, you know, my original step A list was just full of rubbish. It was wanting to make amends to that guy. Really, I just wanted to sleep with him again. And my sponsor very kindly pointed that out. I hated her so much. Anyway, and step nine, step nine was such a profound step. You know, initially, when I looked at step nine, I was convinced I didn't need to make amends to anyone. I hadn't harmed anybody. I was just perfectly innocent. It was all your fault. I would never have caused you harm if you hadn't caused me harm. So actually, you deserved what I did to you. So I didn't think I'd have anyone on my step nine. Oh my God, I was so wrong. Making amends, probably of all... it's probably been the most profound part of the program for me, step nine, but that's probably not true. Every step, excuse me, I'm just going to burp into the mic. Excuse me, I am actually human and I do burp sometimes, sorry about that. Step nine. I'm going to talk, I mean, a lot of the amends that I made really had a profound effect on me, but I'm really going to focus on my amends to my son, because that one terrified me. Because I was using for the first 7 years of his life, and you know that saying, give me the boy for the first 7 years of his life and I'll give you the man. I mean, who the fuck wants to hear that when they've been using for the first 7 years of their child's life? And so I was terrified about the harm I had caused him, and I had, of course, caused him harm. And I was not one of those using addicts who was just a little bit mean. I was horrible. I was violent, abusive, bitter, resentful, aggressive, just nasty. I was a really nasty addict. And I thought initially that step nine was going to be about turning up with this clipboard that said, I'm really sorry for the harm I caused you. Bye. I didn't realise that it was about change. I didn't realise that it was about respecting what was going on with the other person. So it was not appropriate for me to go up to my son. Oh my God, I've got 5 minutes. It wasn't appropriate for me to go up to my son and say, do you know what, I'm really horrible that I was such a bastard when I was using, forgive me. Step nine with him happened really organically, and actually he approached me, and it's happened in layers and layers and layers over the last 17 years, and it's been a process of things like him talking about, why did you use drugs, Mum? And me having to honestly tell him, because he thought it was about him. That was fucking, it's still painful now actually, to actually say, no, Jim, it was about me. I'm an addict. I have a body that can't handle drugs, and I have a mind that craves drugs. Craves. Of all the bits of being clean that have given me the most joy, is that stuff, making amends to my son, and having the kind of relationship that I have with him now, where I didn't teach him a lot of the stuff that he needed to learn. Like, I didn't teach him how to manage his feelings, because I couldn't manage my own. And it's not a case of saying, this is how you do your feelings. I believe we teach by example. And so when I'm managing my own feelings, he learns to manage his feelings. He gets quite angry with me now sometimes, and I allow it. Because as far as I'm concerned, that's my job as his mum, to let him freak out, and I don't feel no way about it. I just let him. I set a boundary, don't get me wrong, I don't let him abuse me. But sometimes he wants to get angry and it's all right. My amends to myself has been things like giving myself all the stuff that I missed out on. I've learned to drive, been to university, got a good education. I wash my face and brush my teeth every day and at night, regardless of whether someone's staying over. How amazing is that? I do yoga and I exercise and I pray and I meditate and I keep coming back. Those are my amends to myself. And do you know what, I've got about 3 minutes to talk about 10, 11 and 12. So I'm going to tell you this. Step 10, I just take inventory. I just check. If I feel remotely uncomfortable about any communication, I check what is going on with me. Not what did you say that made you get on my nerves, you idiot, which is really what I want to do. I check what is going on for me. What has been triggered? Am I being impatient? Am I being intolerant? Something, because you know what, you just are who you are. You're in your process, you're in your journey, you are in exactly the place you're meant to be. It's my choice how I respond to you, and that's the stuff I have power over. Powerless over my addiction, I'm not powerless over my responses and my thinking processes. I have power over that. Step 11 for me is I pray and I meditate and I have no shame about that. I get on my knees and I ask to be kept clean. And I pray constantly for what is God's will for me. Please give me the power to carry it out. And I really believe in the serenity prayer. Particularly, you know the first bit, God grant me the serenity. Because you know without serenity, you think I'm going to have the wisdom to know the difference between what I can change and what I can't change. What's mine? What's yours? What should I do? What should I eat? When should I sleep? I haven't got a clue. I need that serenity, which is why I pray and I meditate and I check in with you lot. And I've got 1 minute to tell you. Step 12 for me is being here, doing my best to lead by example, and that is I stay clean on a daily basis. I do my best to be honest, to be open-minded, to be willing to listen to others, to be willing to connect with my sponsor, to connect with my higher power, and practice these principles in all my affairs. And for me, that means, you know, when I go to Sainsbury's and the person in front of me has got the trolley with the wiggly wheel and I want to kill them, it means not killing them. It means acknowledging that, you know, I might have the trolley with the wiggly wheel next week. And just trying to be a nice person, you know, just trying to be a nice person. And it's not about me giving newcomers advice. Because if I listen to advice, the people I was attracted to were the people who were living their lives 100%, who were happy, doing the best they could. I'm not talking about, don't pretend you're happy if you're not happy. You know, I want to be real, but just do the best, you know, to celebrate who I am, just to be the best me that I can be. Because who I am is fine. I don't need to pretend to be anything other than who I am. Who I am is fine. And I need to stop talking, don't I? Thank you so much for listening to me. Thank you.